And it might be nice if you come downstairs because we're going to be standing down here, not up in the pulpit. Can we see if the stage PC works, if it's come to life? But if not, I'll use the other one. No, looks dead. Thank you. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. There are some things you can see 100 times and yet not notice certain details. And you sort of think, well, I know that, seen that, don't really pay attention. We stop actually looking at what's in front of us. I don't know if you've seen any delivery lorries with this logo on it. We've got loads of stuff, internet deliveries and all that sort of stuff. And FedEx is one of the people who drive vans around the place. And I don't know if you've ever seen that in this logo there's a little arrow that's implying that you're going forward and you're delivering and you're doing stuff. Have you ever seen that before? I had never seen it before. You can look at these things 100 times. And now can you see it? Yeah, you can still see it. And then sometimes we just see something that we've never seen before and we don't really pay attention to it either. So I don't know if you've ever seen this squiggle before and whether it means anything to you. Most of you looking blank, I hadn't seen it before. But if you sort of think about it carefully and look for some letters in it, you might be not too surprised to learn that it stands for London Symphony Orchestra, LSO. And you can see the letters. But if you look really hard, you might be able to see something else. Let me try this very slowly. You might be able to see something else that reminds you of an orchestra in that logo. And sometimes we need to look at things very carefully. Sometimes we miss things until we look carefully. And I think that's what else you've been saying about this story, about the two builders. I don't know how many of you noticed that in Luke chapter 6, how the two builders are described. I think what else he said would have led you down the path of saying that one was a wise one and one was a foolish one. And yet Luke chapter 6 doesn't use the word wise and it doesn't use the word foolish. We think we know it. And yet we haven't seen what's in there. I don't know what it is that strikes you when you look at that story. But sometimes that's what we need to do. We just need to look again and say, is there something here that comforts me? Is there something here that disturbs me? Is there something here that seems, I thought I knew this, but maybe it's not quite what I thought I knew? Sometimes we need to look again. I would like us now to think about a completely different passage, and when we'll come back to this passage, we're going to have a look at James chapter 1. James chapter 1, and starting at verse 22. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Now you can see the reason I've chosen this. It's got the same message as that story that Jesus told. Don't just listen, do. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they've heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. Those who consider themselves religious and yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And James draws us a picture of two different ways of listening to something. We can be like people who look in a mirror. Two different ways of looking, if you like. Someone who looks in a mirror, looks at themselves, and goes away. And he contrasts that and says there's another way of looking. Those who look into the perfect law, they look intently into it, and they continue in it. And there's a little picture that I found on the internet of somebody who'd gone over to Palestine or Israel and looked at the tombs of the sort where Jesus was laid. So he's not saying this is the place where Jesus was laid, but the kind of tomb where Jesus was laid. And he said, I realize that you have to stoop down to look into it. And he said, that reminds me of what it says in the Gospel of John, that the disciples ran to the tomb to see if it really was empty, and one of them stooped down and had a really good look. And it's the same word in the Greek, in the letter of James, when he says, look into the perfect law, looking intently, looking to see what you can find, not just glancing at it like someone looks at a mirror and goes away, but looking, continuing in it, and looking into what's in the perfect law. So we've got this contrast between the two ways of looking. We can look at ourselves, go away, forget what we've seen. And the result is we just deceive ourselves. The result is we have a religion that is worthless. And James contrasts that, and he says the people who look into the perfect law look intently into it. They continue looking at it. They don't forget it, they do it. And the result? They will be blessed. They will be doing a religion that God accepts. What is that sort of a religion that God accepts? It is to keep a tight rein on our tongues. It is to look after orphans and widows in their distress. It is to keep ourselves from being polluted by the world. It is doing what it says, not just being there when the words happen and it goes in one ear and out the other, but doing what it says. Two ways of looking. And now we come back to the story of the two builders. And I don't know what it is about that story that might strike you, but I've been invited to share what I think. So there's a few things that struck me when I was thinking about this. One is the way the story finishes. It describes the house that was built without a firm foundation. It says its destruction was complete. That kind of struck me, that this wasn't just, it was a bit wobbly and not quite as good as the other house. It's pretty negative. It's pretty drastic. It is pretty, as we just sang, its destruction was complete. Another thing that struck me was that the builder had dug down deep. Somebody who's lived in the Middle East a long time writes that the soil in the Middle East can often be very, very hard. And when it's not wet, it just is like rock, really. It takes an awful lot of effort to dig. And maybe that's why you could imagine somebody building a house without much foundation, because it's pretty solid, it's in the ground. The ground is like almost like rock anyway. It's very hard clay. It's almost baked like a brick in the sun. But it takes a lot to dig down and keep digging down till you get to the rock. That struck me. He dug down deep. And then the other thing that struck me is that in both of the stories, the one who built and dug down deep and the one who didn't, it says not if a flood came, it says when the flood came. When the flood came. It's not something that you don't need to worry about because you've looked on your app and it says 40% and we'll probably get away with it. When the flood came. Some of you will know that beginning of last year, I was looking around for a job. And when I was looking around for a job, I went to a seminar. Said, you need to, I felt whether I should look for the same sort of job or a different sort of job, take any advice that anyone would give me. And one of the pieces of advice was given was to think about what my career anchors were. And this is somebody had done some research, and he said, people are looking for different things out of a job. And you need to understand what's important to you in a job to find the right sort of job. And he had 8 different things that you might look at. You might want to be an expert in something. That might be very important to you. You might want to be recognized as being in charge, and that's important to you. Or you might like to do your own thing and you hate being told what to do. You want to do it your way. You might want something that's very predictable. You know exactly what you're going to get. Or you might want something that's got a bit more adventure and something that nobody's ever done before. You might want to do something that somebody else has decided and you're very dedicated to that, or you might want to do something of your own. You might want to do something you've never done before because it stretches you and you think that's really exciting, or you want something predictable. Or you might actually want to do as little as possible because you're really living for the weekends and for the money that you get that pays for the house. And so you might have different career anchors. And when I thought about it, I realised that some of my career anchors actually, over time, had moved. Because if the house is paid for, then maybe I'm not so worried about the security and stability of the job. And perhaps now lifestyle is a bit more important to me than it used to be. So we are like that in our lives, not just in when we change a job. We are building our lives on some sort of a foundation. And our question is, what sort of foundation are we building on? What's important to us? Is it making lots of money? Are we foodies? Are we not people who just eat to live, but actually we live to eat? Do we just want to have fun? Is that what's important to us? As long as we can have a laugh, that's what we're looking for. Or does it really matter to us what people think about us? Do we want to be popular? Do we want even to be famous? All of us put our hope and trust in something. And what we put our trust in becomes our foundation for life. Some people build their lives on the foundation of money, thinking if we've got more money, life will be better. Some say it's the stuff that we've got. Some people build their lives on popularity. If I can get more friends, I'll never be on my own. Life will be great. We can build our lives on all sorts of foundations. But interestingly, if we have a look at what was just before the story we're looking at, Jesus was teaching, blessed are you who are poor. Woe to you who are rich now. Blessed are you who hunger now. Woe to you who have plenty to eat. Blessed are you who weep now. Woe to you who are laughing. Blessed are you when people hate you. Woe to you when everybody speaks well of you. What foundation are we building on? Is it the right foundation? Is it the foundation that Jesus was telling us we want to put our foundation down on? It's an interesting and a challenging thought. And if we've got a different foundation, what can we do about it? Do we actually need to change our foundation, the things that we've been putting first in our lives, the things that we've been building on in our lives? Do we actually need to change it? And changing a foundation isn't that simple. Changing our foundations can be quite hard work. It's a big effort. I know every time I have to renew the house insurance, they always ask, has anybody in your area ever had any subsidence, ever had to have any underpinning? Changing foundations, it's a bit dodgy, a bit difficult, a bit hard. So who's going to help us change our foundation? How are we going to manage to do this tricky thing of changing our foundation? And I'd like to encourage you to think that, yes, we need to change our foundations, but we don't need to do it on our own. That's what church is for, that we can help each other. We can give advice and support to each other. We don't need to do it on our own. And we have God's Holy Spirit to help us. Again, we don't need to do it on our own. If we're changing our foundation, to honour God, then God will help us to change our foundation. So it's quite challenging, really, to come to a passage that we know a lot about and to think, is God going to tell me something, speak to me about something out of this passage again? What strikes me about the passage? What foundations am I building my life on? And how firm are those foundations? How might we need to change these foundations? How? Where do we start? What do we do? What's going to be different this afternoon because we're changing our foundations? Jesus asked a lot of questions in his life when he was teaching, and I'm just going to leave those questions up for us to think about as well. Thank you. There's a couple of other passages in the Bible that you might like to look at if you want to meditate about this this afternoon or later on. One is in Ezekiel chapter 33. One is in Isaiah 28. And those two passages are what we think Jesus used as the starting point for this parable. And they talk about, one of the passages talks about the prophet saying, look, nation of Israel, you think that you're going to be all right because you've entered into an alliance with Egypt. So you've got the enemy coming against you, but you've entered into an alliance with Egypt and you think you're going to be okay. And he refers to that alliance with Egypt as an alliance with death, because the religion of Egypt was very much about what happens to you after you die and building big pyramids and making sure you're going to be okay after you're dead. And he said, you've made this alliance with death, but the storm's going to come, the enemy's going to attack you, and you're going to be swept away. You're not going to be saved because you've made this alliance with death. And it's almost like Jesus is saying, if you've not got the right foundation, what your foundation is a foundation on death. And Jesus wants us to have a foundation that's on life. And the other passage talks about a stone, and that's where we think about Jesus being the foundation stone, and we have Paul, for example, expands on this, that the whole of our church life is built on the foundation stone of Jesus Christ. He is the cornerstone. He's the stone, you could say a cornerstone's at the top, you could say it's a foundation stone at the bottom, that we build our lives on something solid, and that's Jesus Christ. And there shouldn't be any other. For the church, there is no other stone that can be set. And there's a kind of a play on words there, because the Hebrew word for stone and the Hebrew word for sun are very, very similar. And so when Jesus said that he was God's son, it's kind of a play on words. He's the stone on which the church was going to be built. And so this whole little story that we think of as a little Sunday school story that we know all about has got quite a lot of connections into the rest of the Bible and into the way that we think about our faith, that we build on the stone. The stone is the rock. The Son of God is that stone that the whole temple is built on, and that's what we need to have our foundations on. And then if we don't, well, unfortunately, the story is pretty blunt. Its destruction was complete. We are not talking about, if you listen to Jesus' words, you know, that's probably okay and that's good and they're nice. And if you put them into practice, then that's kind of a bonus, really. We're not talking about a bonus. We're talking about something we absolutely need. Because the alternative is a destruction that is complete, just being swept away by the flood. And we've seen lots of stuff on the news, haven't we, recently, about just how close people in Whaley Bridge came to being swept away by a flood, and many other parts of the world. Perhaps that's going to be something to help us think about this story seriously.